Not everyone knows how to perform CPR, but most people at least have an image of how the process begins. One stranger crouches over another stranger, and their mouths meet. Well, that image is now officially outdated. The American Heart Association recently put out new CPR guidelines that no longer call for mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Instead, chest compression only is the suggested new technique. Carrie Goldberg is co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog, and she's been reporting on these new CPR guidelines. Now, Carrie is a longtime health journalist, so she already knew CPR, right?
No, I did not. But in fact, reporting on these new rules for CPR helped convince me that I really needed to learn it. I was talking to a doctor who said, you know, it's really every citizen's responsibility to know how to do this. And I said, yeah, I guess that's true. I better learn.
So you decided to go to a local CPR class where you expected to learn the new CPR approach, this chest-only compression.
Right.
And so where did you go?
I went to my town's CPR class. I'd like to leave them nameless because they actually were doing me a favor by giving me this free CPR course. But it turned out that they were kind of doing it the old way, like they hadn't gotten the memo yet that you don't need to do the mouth-to-mouth anymore.
So they were still teaching mouth-to-mouth, even though the new standard says chest compression only is the better way to go.
Yes, they said that as far as they knew, the guidelines at this very moment were that you still do mouth-to-mouth.
So what was the training like?
So the training was actually very fun. You come into a room and there's sort of like half a dummy lying there, like a torso with a head. And you watch a video and it tells you that you need to first check the scene to make sure that it's basically safe, get somebody to call 911, and then you actually practice the physical compressions. And for people who can't see me, I'm sort of pressing against the desk with my hands.
You've got one hand on top of the other.
Yep. Yep. And if I were with the dummy, I would be kneeling on the ground next to the dummy, and I would be sort of putting my weight onto my palms as I did each compression.
Is there a concern about pressing too hard or breaking ribs?
So it is possible to break ribs, but what the teacher said was that much better to break a rib than to be ineffective, actually. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. So any particular tips they gave you that are helpful for people who might be listening right now?
Well, so my favorite tip was a musical one. I had been told that if you want to maintain the 100 beats per minute that you're supposed to maintain with these compressions, that one song you could use to give yourself the rhythm was the Bee Gees' Staying Alive. But that was kind of horrible to me. Like, I hate the Bee Gees. It's this horrible old disco. And so one of the trainers actually whispered to me that another song you can use is Queen's Another One Bites the Dust.
So to this very song right here, this is the beat we're hearing.
Yes, that's right.
So that bump, bump, bump. That would get you 100 compressions per minute?
Yes, yes.
So as long as you have this playing in your head, you understand the beat.
Exactly. And I find that that's what I do when I do the compressions. I do bump, bump, bump. Another one bites the dust. And then the only caveat would be that probably you don't want to be like singing those words to the victim.
Yeah, another one bites the dust.
Yes.
Not very morale lifting.
Exactly.
Now, as I listen to this beat, I don't think my heart beats that fast. So if I needed CPR, wouldn't I be getting too many compressions?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I just know that you are trying to, by doing the compressions, you're trying to keep the oxygen flowing through the person's blood. And maybe, I don't know, maybe you have to do it faster than they normally would beat.
Huh. Mm-hmm. All right. So then what does this mean for the status of mouth-to-mouth resuscitation? Is this just old school, ditch it, don't do it anymore?
Well, that's what I understand is the recommendation from the experts. All I can tell you from a personal point of view is that it is kind of yucky. Like when I was being trained on it with these dummies, I was like getting lipstick all over the mouth and I was getting there are like strands of spit hanging out of my mouth. And it was just, I mean, I'd like to believe that I would still do it for a person that I found on the ground, but it definitely has a yuck factor.
Would you say that that was the reaction of other people training as well? That yuck factor made them think, oh, now I have to do the mouth to mouth part.
Yeah, it did kind of seem that way. They did have, one of our options was a kind of a little tube that you could blow through so that you didn't have to actually put your mouth on the dummy's mouth. But who walks around with a tube?
You know? So do you think that you would be more likely to give someone emergency CPR now that you know that it's only chest compressions that you have to do and you don't have to get mouth to mouth with a stranger who may be unconscious on the street?
Well, I really think the difference is that I got the training at all. I mean, the fact is that now I feel confident enough that if I found someone lying on a street, I would approach them and do what I learned how to do. And I probably wouldn't do the mouth to mouth just because I happen to know that that's the latest recommendations. But it's the training that matters, I think. I know that there are data that found that people were more likely to do the CPR if they didn't have to do the mouth-to-mouth. But no, I think I would have. I'd like to think I would have done it.
Well, it's interesting because even among the medical professionals who are now recommending chest-only compression, although they say there's good science behind it, they acknowledge that for some people there is a gross-out factor. And they feel that if chest-only compression gets more people training in CPR and knowing how to do CPR, that's a good thing because it could save more lives.
Yes, I'd like to think that it's not just a gross-out factor. It's also that it's just simpler to do the chest-only.
Because you're focusing on one thing rather than two.
Yeah, and when you do the mouth-to-mouth, you also have to make sure the head is tipped the right way and the airway is open, and it just adds more complications when you're in a panic because you're terrified.
So, Carrie, now you're ready. If you see someone who needs CPR, you feel like you are a good layperson, volunteer professional to do CPR. Volunteer, yes. Amateur to do CPR.
Right. I just really hope it doesn't happen.
Carrie Goldberg, thanks very much.
Thank you, Sasha.
Carrie Goldberg is co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. And joining me now in the studio is Dr. Aaron Bagish. He's associate director of the Cardiovascular Performance Program at Mass General Hospital. Thanks for being here, Dr. Bagish.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
And listeners, we want to know if you've ever performed CPR or whether you've avoided it sort of guiltily for fear of mouth-to-mouth contact. We want to know if now that you know it's chest-only compression, which is the suggested way by the American Heart Association, you think you're more likely to help that stranger that might have a crisis in front of you. We want your stories. We also want your questions. Dr. Bagish is here to answer questions about new CPR technique. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So, Dr. Bagish, thanks for coming in. So, review for us. Historically, CPR has been taught as alternating between mouth-to-mouth resuscitation or ventilation and then chest compressions.
That's correct. And the traditional sequence has called for an ABC approach in which the A stands for establishing an airway, the B stands for providing breathing or rescue breath, and the C stands for circulation, which entails providing chest compressions.
And the advice now is that chest compressions alone should do the trick and maybe even be better.
That's right. One of the major paradigm shifts with the new CPR guidelines is to reverse these letters and to change them from an ABC approach to a CAB approach.
And even though that's the case, we just heard from Carrie Goldberg, who went to a local CPR training course, and she was taught the old-fashioned way. So why, if these are the new guidelines, are we still seeing the old way being taught?
Well, there's an inevitable delay. Whenever new guidelines come out in any field, there's a period of time that's required for the guidelines to be put into clinical practice. And actually, if you look carefully at the literature around these guidelines, there's an acknowledgement that there's going to take time and energy for the guidelines to be implemented on a community level. And that's what's happening right now. We're seeing the parent document that just came out a few months ago being digested by the medical community. And in time, that will be taught in the local classes.
So could you address briefly why this change happened? Because there seems to be some gray area about whether this is driven by science, it's better science to do chest only, or is it that so many people were squeamish about mouth to mouth that that was reason alone to change it?
It's a great question, and truthfully, it's a combination of both. I will tell you that the success rates when someone has an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, and again, we define success as being discharged alive from the hospital at the end of the day, the success rates have historically been pretty abysmal. And so there's been a recognition for a long period of time that anything that can be done to improve the quality of out-of-hospital resuscitation is going to improve the chances of someone being alive at the end of the day. There's also been good evidence, both scientific and anecdotal, that people just don't do CPR as often as they should. And Carrie mentioned the yuck factor. That's one aspect of it. The other thing is that CPR, although it's been attempted to be streamlined, it's actually been quite complicated based on the prior guidelines. And there's been a real desire to streamline things.
This is Radio Boston, and I'm talking with Dr. Aaron Bagish at Mass General Hospital about new CPR guidelines that say skip mouth-to-mouth. You can just do chest-only compression. Dr. Bagish is here to answer any questions you have about CPR. We also want to hear your CPR stories, whether you've ever had to do it, how well it worked, and if you think knowing that it's chest-only compression, you'd be more likely to do it. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we have a caller from Jamaica Plain. This is Jen. Jen, have you ever performed CPR?
A few times, but only twice outside of a hospital setting.
And how did it go?
How did it go?
Yeah.
Well, one of the times I was in a train station, I actually carry a little mouth barrier because I don't really want to put my mouth on some stranger. And I used that until the barrier got wet and could possibly have some contamination go through. So I continued chest compressions only until EMS came, which was fortunately very fast. And I still am reluctant to think about the idea of not giving any respiration. You know,
You're reluctant not to do mouth to mouth, but also reluctant to do it.
I did mouth to mouth in a sense that I had the barrier, and I did that until the barrier got dirty.
Do you carry a barrier because you're a health professional, or are you not a health professional, but you just have it on you in case you see someone who needs CPR, and it makes you feel better about the mouth to mouth piece?
I started carrying not a barrier, but a little face mask. Actually, years ago when I was in high school, because my father was a firefighter, and he said you'll never know when you might need to do CPR. But I am a nurse, so I do in the hospital environment as well.
Jen, thanks for that. I want to go to another caller from Jamaica Plain, and this is Brenda. And Brenda, have you done CPR?
Yes, I have, one time.
And what was the circumstance?
I was on the T, and a man had collapsed, and it was hard. I hadn't known about it right away, but no one actually had gone to start CPR, and so when I got back in there, I did do mouth to mouth and started.
Brenda, we lost you a little bit. You did mouth to mouth.
Like I had, you know, heads, but I like.
Brenda, I think we're losing you. Let me go to another caller. This is Scott calling from Somerville.
Hi, yes. I have a question as far as the mouth-to-mouth not being there anymore. Is it still incrementally better if you have the time and maybe another person to still do it? I'll take my answer off here.
So is mouth-to-mouth better than chest compression if you're willing and know how?
Well, no. Both of them. In other words, you're just doing chest-to-chest now, but saying if you did mouth-to-mouth also, is that incrementally better for results?
Dr. Bagish of Mass General, you want to take that?
Yeah, a few points of clarification. One, the guidelines haven't eliminated the value of rescue breathing or mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. They've placed it as a second priority. So the idea is that if you don't know how to do mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, if you're not comfortable with it, then compressions are better than doing nothing. But the current algorithm still calls for rescue breathing after an initial round of compressions. So it still does play an important role. That being said, if someone doesn't know how or feel comfortable doing mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, chest compressions themselves will oxygenate the heart and lungs enough for a period of time to increase the likelihood of the resuscitation being successful.
Dr. Bagish, can you explain the science of that a little bit? Because my understanding is that the old thinking was that you want to give mouth-to-mouth because that restores oxygen to the blood. But now there's thinking that there's enough oxygen in the blood already. It's more important to do the compressions because that keeps the flow.
Right, and that's exactly right. There's enough oxygen in the blood at the time a person has a cardiac arrest that if circulation can be sustained, that the oxygenation of the important target organs is going to be sufficient. A second aspect of this is that every time a chest compression is done, you're causing the lungs to deflate and then reinflate. So you're actually causing some degree of airflow in and out of the lungs, which oxygenates the blood further.
So the idea is keep the compressions going steadily. That should be what you focus on, the chest compressions.
Keep the chest compressions going steadily unless you're comfortable and are trained in doing mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. And then there's a role for that after 30 compressions.
We actually have here in the studio a little dummy or a little half dummy. It's just basically a torso in the head. And I believe you're going to do a demonstration, which I hope you'll describe as vividly as you can. Can you show us how you would do appropriate CPR?
I can indeed.
All right, so you're standing up.
So I'm standing up, and this is actually probably a good time just to go over some of the basic tenets with respect to encountering a victim who's collapsed. There are five key principles that go into the new guidelines that really emphasize the fact that when someone collapses out of the hospital, there are five key steps to ensuring that they're going to successfully make it to hospital discharge. The first is actually recognizing that a cardiac arrest has occurred. So that is, someone loses consciousness, is not breathing on their own, or is gasping for breath. That dictates a cardiac arrest. And one of the first things people have to do is realize that. The second thing that needs to be done is they need to activate the emergency medical system. I can't stress this enough, and that is that if someone goes down, it needs to be the police, ambulance, fire department, EMS need to be notified immediately so they can arrive on scene.
So let me clarify those two. First of all, second thing you said is basically first call 911. Before you do anything yourself, start getting the emergency personnel response going.
Absolutely.
And number one, just because someone's lying on the ground unconscious doesn't mean they need CPR. If their chest is moving and they're breathing, you don't need to do it?
If they are breathing spontaneously and the breathing pattern is normal and you can then feel a pulse, it's not necessary to start CPR. However, the guidelines make it very clear that if this is in question, it's better to start CPR and find out you don't need it than to hold off.
Okay, so those are the first two, and you were going to say there were more.
Okay, so the next one is to identify whether an automated defibrillator is available on scene. Defibrillators are devices that are designed to provide an electrical shock which can jumpstart the heart back into a sustaining rhythm. Many public places now, shopping malls, sports arenas, libraries, are equipped with these devices. So when a cardiac arrest is identified, in addition to calling an ambulance, people on scene need to start asking the question, is there a defibrillator and can I access it? Because that can actually be applied by any bystander at this point.
And if there's no defibrillator?
Start compressions.
And how do we do that?
Okay, so we have a patient that's been identified as being in cardiac arrest. They're not breathing. They're not responding to questions. Hands go onto the chest.
So now you're standing, but normally would you be on your knees over a person on the ground?
Well, the important thing is that the person's back is on a hard surface. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine that trying to perform chest compressions when someone's lying on a bed on a mattress is difficult.
And this dummy is on a hard surface. He's on our studio table.
This mannequin is on a hard surface.
Okay.
Absolutely. And so I have one palm placed directly on the patient's sternum, my other palm placed on top of my open hand. My arms are outstretched and straight. I'm leaning over the patient, and I'm starting now to compress the chest. One of the important aspects here is that the new guidelines state that chest compression should be at a depth of 2 inches. That's for adults,
and that's
for children.
The chest should go down by 2 inches?
Absolutely, because what you're really trying to do is use the sternum to squeeze blood out of the heart. And one of the most unfortunate mistakes that happens in CPR is that the chest is not compressed enough. As you remember, Carrie was mentioning the issue of breaking ribs. No one wants to have broken ribs, but it's better to have rib fractures and have adequate compressions than to have inadequate compressions.
So you need to push really hard.
You need to push.
You need to feel comfortable watching that chest really smash down.
And I will tell you that the first time you do this, it's a life-changing experience, but it can also be a life-saving experience.
Okay. So, all right. So your hands are in position.
So hands are in position. I'm making certain that I'm safe and that I'm not in the middle of a road or about to be hit by a train, and I'm going to start my compressions, and they go as followed.
So you're very rhythmically pushing that chest down.
And importantly, allowing the chest to recoil to its maximally inflated position.
Ah, so make sure it all goes all the way up.
Absolutely.
Okay. And how long will you do that?
I'll do that for as long as I need to. Now, I'm trained in CPR, and I understand how mouth-to-mouth resuscitation can work, so I'll do an initial 30 compressions, and then I'll deliver 2 rescue breaths. If I didn't have CPR training, or for some reason I didn't feel comfortable doing mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, I would continue this until I was relieved by an EMT or a paramedic.
So until an ambulance showed up, basically.
You got it.
We have a caller who is from North Attleboro who works in pediatric ER. And Erica, do you have a question for Dr. Aaron Bagish about these new CPR guidelines that say skip the mouth-to-mouth, just do chest compression?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that I don't think those recommendations apply to children. The no mouth-to-mouth doesn't apply to children. It only applies to adults.
Dr. Bagish, is that
that's my latest understanding.
And Dr. Bagish, is that correct?
Well, the no mouth-to-mouth doesn't apply to anyone. Mouth-to-mouth or rescue breathing is still a part of all the guidelines. But as the caller hits on the head, there are differences with respect to adult and pediatric resuscitation. One of the key differences is that pediatric sudden cardiac arrests are almost always due to asphyxiations or problems with breathing. So it may very well be that mouth-to-mouth breathing plays a more important role in resuscitating a child. However, the recommendations still are, if there's any doubt, start with chest compressions and then perform rescue breathing.
We also have a caller from the North End, and this is Daniel. And Daniel, your thoughts about these new CPR guidelines that say skip mouth-to-mouth, just do chest compressions.
I think that for just the layperson, these are great. The important thing is to build that vacuum in your circulatory system to keep the oxygen flowing. I've done CPR a number of times on people, and I just if it's going to happen, it's going to be somebody that you know. So getting trained is the best thing you can do. Either go into a training center, or you can get the dummy and the DVD from the American Heart Association website. It's not that much money, and it's going to be somebody that you love. And you need to be ready when it happens. And and I would also say that CPR is a really tiring exercise to do. And so when you start doing it, make sure that somebody knows that they're going to be switching in, because you're going to get worn out. And when you get worn out and your form gets bad. All of a sudden, you're not doing a good job of keeping that blood moving, and now you're not being now you're not helping effectively. So as soon as you start getting tired, get somebody in there to help.
Daniel, thanks for that. Interestingly, related to what you said about it can happen to anyone and maybe someone you know, is that some of the health professionals who've been writing about the new guidelines have said that learning CPR is part of being a responsible citizen. They look at it as something that you really need to do because you could be called on. And Dr. Bagish, in some of the reading I've done about this, there's this hope or this belief that doing it this way will save more lives just because more people are willing to give CPR this way when there is no mouth-to-mouth. Is that your belief?
Yeah, absolutely. I think anything we can do to minimize the chance of someone having a cardiac arrest and having someone there that either doesn't know how to respond or doesn't feel comfortable responding is going to increase the chance of us saving lives. You know, before I became a physician, I spent a lot of time working on ambulances as an EMT and a paramedic. And what struck me time and time again was that I'd drive up onto the scene and find someone that was down, surrounded by people that were engaged, were interactive or horrified, but were inactive and were not doing anything. And that wasn't because they were bad people. It's because they either didn't know what to do or were not comfortable doing what they had been previously trained to do. And I think the guidelines really make this something that's much more approachable and much more feasible for many people.
That yuck factor, as I think you and Carrie Goldberg called it, is it a false alarm? I mean, even though we're trying to move away from mouth to mouth, more to chest compression, if that makes people more comfortable, should people not be worried about the mouth-to-mouth and the hygiene factor of that?
Yeah, I mean, to my knowledge, the worst thing you're going to catch from doing mouth-to-mouth resuscitation is the common cold. There's never been any real evidence that in the absence of blood in someone's mouth or something like that, that you're going to get a serious illness from it. You know, one of the previous callers mentioned having a face barrier, and these are commercially available things, and I really applaud her for having that. It sounded like her father was a firefighter and had suggested she do that. These are available, and as more people learn CPR, I hope more and more people carry these devices.
We have a caller from Fall River. This is Dan. And Dan, you're a CPR instructor?
I am. I'm a CPR instructor as well as a ALS EMT provider and almost a paramedic as well. I've been an instructor now for about 4 years. And my question was, with this new guideline coming into effect, are we going to be teaching bystanders or even healthcare providers for that matter to check for pulses prior to starting compressions as opposed to when we did the airway breathing and then circulation?
So pulse check, I think, is the question?
Yeah, so it's a great question. The guidelines certainly de-emphasize the importance of pulse checks, and they recommend spending no more than 10 seconds at any point in the resuscitation effort doing a pulse check. And the reason for that is that pulse checks are notoriously difficult to do, even when people are well-trained and have spent a lot of time practicing it. So there is still a role for doing a pulse check intermittently during the course of a prolonged resuscitation, but the guidelines de-emphasize the importance right off the bat.
Aaron Bagish, thank you very much for this. Dr. Aaron Bagish is Associate Director of the Cardiovascular Performance Program at Mass General Hospital. He's been talking about the new CPR guidelines that say chest only is okay. You can skip mouth to mouth if you feel more comfortable with it. Dr. Bagish, thank you.
My pleasure.
To find a CPR class in your area and to see a video from the American Heart Association on the new CPR guidelines, visit our website, wbur.org/Boston. And before we take a break for fundraising, we just want to remind you that the support that you give to BUR is truly critical for programs such as Radio Boston. We depend on that support to cover the city and to do stories and cover issues as much as we can about where you live. So we really depend on your generosity. So please do what you can to support this program by contributing to this short fundraiser. Thanks very much. This is Sasha Pfeiffer, and we'll be back tomorrow with more Radio Boston.